welcome to Weddings and Funerals, a podcast dedicated to people getting together and also people who die.
What was Tom's parody version of Art and Labor? I think it was Sports and Business Time or something.
Yeah.
Or Sports and Playtime. What I think it was Sports.
Sports and Playtime, I think. I can't remember. But
no,
yeah.
Business and Playtime? I can't remember.
Yeah. It was the antithesis of us.
Bizarro Art and Labor.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking about it because I was like, wow, we just for a really long time we've just been covering like union efforts and stuff, and I was like kind of my brain was breaking until I came up with like, oh, weddings and funerals, because we're like, hey, these people, it's like a union isn't just a huge old wedding where everybody gets married to each other. And then
everyone comes together for a huge party of Game Master Anthony style.
Yes. And then funerals are like, oh, but these people, they fell apart. And look at them being all dead over there.
Their effort failed and they all lost their jobs.
Yeah, which is bad and sad. Yeah. And funerals. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Wow. It just feels like a constant, yeah, like this one popped up, this one popped up. This one tried to pop up. This one's in the process of popping up.
This one's going up. This one's going down. Everybody make sure to just hitch your emotional wagon to the crazy
trade unionism. It's wild because it's wild because it's happening, right? It's like art was the original gig economy. Now everything's gig economy, and now art is catching up.
Yeah,
to unions. I mean, maybe it's sign of really good things to come, but it's extremely messy right now.
It's so intense, but like when I don't know, it's like if you're focusing on the micro moves of a situation where it's like doing the arithmetic of, you know, the like, oh, okay, every day we're gonna keep track of every union story and we're going to be having live updates of every single thing that's going on. I don't know.
Which it's hard. It's hard. I try to keep a tabs on Twitter, but it's like, you know, we don't have the funding and the structure to be like journalists.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly like what I'm getting to is just I literally can't concentrate on everybody else's job because I actually don't have a job.
Totally.
That's been the main conclusion in my life was like, you know what's really weird? Making yourself sick just to follow the news.
Yeah, it's really a lot. And I definitely had a breakdown about it. And then I tried to get a real job because I have an off the books job. And then when that failed, I was really just in a pit sort of for a while. And then the holidays happened. And
yeah. Well, that's been rough because the job you applied for, they keep kind of stringing you into it. Like, you applied for it
so
two other times, and
it's
the people
so
are like, oh, we like you.
Yeah. It's extremely annoying.
Yeah. That's emotional.
Because I really feel like, oh, this time I'll get it. And then I don't. And it's like, what am I supposed to fucking do? I think it's just I literally need another degree, and can't fucking afford another degree.
Oh my God, yes. I was just thinking the same thing. Something happened in my life where all of a sudden I'm like, the nature of my work history makes no sense to most people outside of the art world. And then inside of the art world, it's like, oh, sorry, but like you can't, I mean, do you have an MFA or do you have like, can you?
I think we have to lie.
Do you know people?
Can we just lie?
Well, maybe, but no, because it's
Joey's
such a small
nodding.
Yeah. I like, but I'm not going to be like, oh, come on. It's me, Larry Gagosian. Let me in.
I don't know. I think there's I think there's some easier lies than that.
No, of course. But it was almost like, oh, you know, it's like if you look at NYFA, which everybody, so I've been unemployed for a while and I just started a job driving a truck. But it's like oh, hey, we're looking for, like, a collections manager, or we're looking for, you know, a curator for the historical epoch of the 1800s, and if you could work at the Met, and, you know, it's like, oh my God, all right, sure, I'm sure that I could just sort photographs from the 1800s, but you have to have, like, a PhD in
Also
have to know everybody in that
and
specific sector of the community. Yeah. And it's like, and then people just keep telling you, oh, why don't you, have you checked this job board? There's all of these art jobs. And it's like, you know what? Just nobody talk to me about anything. Just nobody talk to me about a goddamn thing.
Like, I don't need your advice. I know the field.
Yeah.
I know the field really well.
Yeah. It's like, when I say that I'm fucked, I just actually mean that. I'm not being like, it's not low self-esteem. I'm trying every day to do something with my life. But, yeah.
Ugh.
It's weird. And then I just, yeah, I kind of like couldn't focus on anything aside from just putting dollars together, and then
I mean, we had a couple of really powerhouse episodes where we can just like listen to our guests, which is great.
Powerhouse.
Like, I really love them, but it was nice to have a little break because it's hard.
I wanted to talk about this job now too, because okay, so we've been focusing on, you know, the labor rights of art handlers, and now I am an art handler.
You're like that guy with the truck and the Mountain Dew and the
basically
the Declaration of Independence.
I basically, oh my gosh, yes, yes, it's like that insane.
Yeah.
I go in and out of all of these really prestigious environments, and I just drag stuff around for them, and I put stuff in a truck, and I take stuff out of a truck all over the city. And like we go to the, we drop stuff off at the Rockefeller Center.
Wow.
And they want like, you know, 50 framed pictures of a tulip or some bullshit. You know, just they're like, hey, we have an extra $1 million lying around. Can you just give us garbage hotel art, but like in really expensive frames? And it's like, yes, yes, of course. They're crazy. So you have to go through this whole thing when you deliver there where there's like bomb sniffing dogs. And everybody's got to get processed, so they take everybody's license, and they're, like, mean mugging you to make sure you're this person in the picture, and, like, you know, it's just, it's really intense, and then you drive the truck into this elevator, and then you go to this subterranean level, and then they, like, yeah, they take you around to the loading bay, but it's, like, I don't know, going around the city and seeing all of these places, and then also going into penthouses, and, like, you get to the penthouse through an elevator that's got like gold inlays on it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, I'm an ant, and I'm just,
yeah, you're servicing it. They're like, it's wild. Like, cause I've been in like these types of apartments where it has a totally separate and like entrance, totally separate staircase elevator for the workers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of it is because it's because of freight. Like, of course, there's a freight, but then it's also like, it's sort of like, separation is happening. A poor door is happening. Like, it's, you know.
Exactly.
There's
these back freight elevators. You're not allowed to carry anything in, like, public, his quote unquote public elevator.
Yeah.
If it's so, even if it's like a small framed object that you're holding in your arms, it looks like you're kind of working or something. So you can't use that elevator.
And they do not like you to use the for moving anything for.
Which, you know, fair enough. You're building your rules. It's just totally bizarre. It's given me this thing, okay, I'm going to set up the other material aspects of this job. So I get up around like 6 or 7 in the morning, depending on where I have to meet the truck. I go, and we go all the way through, like, we just do Manhattan and Brooklyn, but I guess we could take more places, whatever. But we do all of these stops, and then there's like a little crew, so it's mm-hmm. just three of us. And then we'd take the whole day and then drive back to Boston and get back around, like, and unload the truck there. And then the day ends at, like, 1 a.m. or so. So it's, like, a 20-hour workday.
So wild.
It's insane.
And you're stuck in fucking Boston also.
Yeah, and then I have to get back.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's so, then I take, like, a Bolt bus or, like, a Mega Horrible. Bus or something. It's been cool, though, because I get to read. So I've been reading, been reading up on realism. What is real?
Wow. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. Just disassociating after a 20-hour workday and then reading about what is real.
Well, yeah. Right. That's the balance of scale. I was talking to my housemate about my two poles, where I'm either like extremely like focused on like material politics and like anti-capitalism, or I'm just watching anime and completely like,
yeah,
like and I was like, those are like my two interests. And then they were like, oh, so like one helps like ground the other or something, because it's like,
oh, definitely.
Yeah, it's like, oh, that's like me relaxing and then me focusing and then me relax, like it's like a balancing act or something.
You can't, yeah, you've got to differentiate. It's just weird though, like I haven't been able to access like daily events in the same way, or people's conversations about labor,
right,
because of this like extreme frustration in like the necessity to organize my time in a way that allows me to keep up this like stream of income. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know what else to do. I'm just gonna do this. And then like, you know, I just hope that the world accepts instead of like completely alienates me. You know, because everyone is like, oh, well, what are we even gonna talk about if you're not like looking at stuff on social media or like at least reading the news? And like, what do you want me to?
No,
and
I think your experience is enough like to talk about, I think, but
well, but it's just, you I know
get,
what I mean?
Yeah, I get the pressure.
I mean, well, it's just, I just think of it in terms of the way that we build our communities, right, and the way that we talk about like intellectualism and the way that we like create expertise around certain things, and then how people can be coming literally from the experience that someone else is writing a Marxist critique of.
Totally.
And just, it's like, oh, sorry, what are you doing here? You don't know the terms I'm using, or you don't know. And like, I think there's some kind of, it's almost like people, I don't know, where you get into some kind of a mindset where everyone is focusing on whoever else is online or whoever else is like, I don't know, stuck in the mode of description and trying to be the best writer that they can.
Yeah, it becomes like a competition or something.
Yeah, and then these writers will be like, oh, you don't know how hard I'm working, like trying to describe what work is or something. Or like, it's like, wait, what is going on? I seriously don't know what a lot of people are talking about sometimes.
No, I think people need to take stock of what they have sometimes. And I know it's like we're all part of the working class. Like, it's like most of the time, but like sometimes there's like times where people can straddle like the professional managerial class and not know what to do with that and not recognize that they have attained a different position than maybe they started from of a more general working class background, and through education and luck and whatever the fuck, they are in a different class position.
Right.
And that doesn't mean they're less of a Marxist or whatever the fuck, but I think they just need to recognize that, like, okay, maybe I've either entered the professional managerial class or I'm straddling it somehow.
Yeah.
And
but like, if you want to talk about accessibility and, right, you know, and the kind of like places that you enter into and then the subject matters that you end up taking up, it's like, why not do the service of describing the place that you're in for people who aren't in it. So if you enter into a place where it's like, oh, I'm actually, like, you know, working in a university and I'm tenured and I've got a PhD and blah, blah, like, well, then tell me what that's like. Tell me what it's like to be in an environment where you were running this weird, like, you know, authoritative, like, university position. Like, what is that? What's that struggle like? Because I'm not doing that and I would like to move around, but instead it's like, no, I'm writing about what being a trucker is going to be like. It's like, well, just fucking, we'll drive a truck then.
Yeah.
Like,
it's true. I think the best journalistic stories are the ones that center the subjects and include them in part of the process. I think those are some of the most powerful pieces that are, they're more tangible. They have a material basis. They have, a face.
Yeah.
And they're not just like a wild, like, sort of predictions or like assumptions about what the working class is or something like that.
Totally.
Which I think happens like very, like, all too often in lefty, New York lefty discussions where they're just like, maybe this is how people are. Maybe this is like, or like, you know, I'm from this and people are like this where I'm from. And it's like, okay, I would like to talk to them then. Like,
right.
If that's the case.
Like, yeah.
You know, I run into that all the time. And it's funny what you're saying about the sort of institutions, like, in intellectualism. I was just talking this morning to, like, a friend of mine who has been a Marxist-Leninist the whole time I've known them, which is probably since, like, I don't know, 2011 or something. Like,
it's a good long clip.
Like, you know, before this recent wave is...
Right, before the Bernie bros yes. decided they had to all get their socialist cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, before I fully understood what this was, and I'm slowly learning, and I've, like, you know, I'm like, oh, I understand what they were talking about 3 years ago or something. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like...
It takes a while, yeah. I mean, that's why everything is described as, like, kind of the... in terms of consciousness and how it can be, like, dawning on you in real time that
right.
you are a political identity to begin with, instead of, like, a lot of people just thinking they could have an apolitical experience.
Right. And I posted this in the Discord for any folks who support us on Patreon. Support us on Patreon.
Please. No, it's fine. Do what you want.
Yeah.
I don't even care.
If you can't, just DM me. I'll give you an invite to the Discord. It's fine. But I posted in the Discord a thread from this friend of mine, and the thread is critical of anarchists, and I was really taking it to heart because, like, I feel like, you know, in the past I was an anarchist. I was in an anarchist collective. I don't think I quite understood terms and things, but
I was behaving
like an anarchist.
Yeah.
And I take these criticisms from both ends, from anarchists and from Marxist-Leninists. I take the both to heart, and I like hearing these different perspectives, and I like processing them. And so they were like, yeah, they were critiquing the use of the word queer and anarchist separatists and queer separatism, and I took that to heart because I feel like I'm constantly straddling, like, fuck it, I'm out, I'm just gonna go live upstate, and just fuck out of here. I'm just sick of everything, and I, like, I'm just done, you know. And then,
yeah, what? Yeah, what political affiliation is just being done? How about, like, yeah, where on the spectrum is miss me with your bullshit?
Yeah, but it's like, it's also like the people who are in a position to exit, like, are often like wealthier to begin with. And I don't want to leave anyone behind. And like, that's why I am no longer committed to any anarchist project, because I believe like a socialist infrastructure will eventually bring all the people who want self-determination back in. But yeah, I messaged them about it, and I was like, well, what do you think is the solution to folks who like feel like separating because they're just done? Because like, I sympathize with that.
Well, that's where all of the jokers come in, you know? That's where all of the Jordan Peterson, yeah, nihilist, yeah, alt-right people pick up, because it's like, dude, I feel seriously abused by the left. I feel seriously abused by intellectual pursuits and all of this, like, I don't know, intelligentsia or whatever. I feel like seriously abused by just trying to interface with a capitalist structure. I feel seriously just like I don't know what else, because I'm like, I don't really get a lot of comfort from my family situations. Yeah. I'm single. I live in a room. I have a cat.
Cat
scratched my eyelid.
Okay, cat is also on the...
I'm like, oh my God, I just buy this cat treats and health food. I still love the cat and am very nice to it. I kept back my harsh language from the cat because it doesn't need to hear it. Those words.
protect your little friend.
Yeah.
Get you.
No, but that totally makes sense, though. Just that, you know, there's all this, like, infighting with everyone. And, you know, I'm not going to leave my position or my studies or anything. But, like, yeah, it's few and far between that you find someone you can actually talk to without it seeming like this very transactional sort of like sussing out of like, oh, can you do something for me? Or like, are you competition? Or is, you know.
Fuck, yeah. I totally agree. I feel lucky that I have like these kind of corners of online where we've just been friends online for so long that like I can just be like, hey, I was in an anarchist collective and I understand the impulse that they have sometimes.
Yeah.
I just want to know what you think like, the solution
you're
is.
You're safe for being an anarchist.
Well, no, not they, because they were, they're the Marxist-Leninist. I felt safe as being a former anarchist tendencies person. And I felt safe to talk to them and be like, I'm just curious what to do. Like, how do we reach people like that? Like, how do we work together?
Yeah, I think it's really, you know, I'm just coming to realize more about, it's like the way that we see power relations in general, and that whole, like, I don't know, I feel like Foucault really screwed up a lot of people,
mm-hmm,
because you can't really divorce yourself from the matrix once you're kind of indoctrinated into it. You're either like you're always in relationship to it.
Right.
It's funny,
yeah.
But like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like, once you start dissecting power, you're always either conscious of your like negation of it,
mm-hmm,
or your like position in it.
Right.
And it always like ropes you back in. And I was just wondering if there was a way to like have a different experience of just existing simply in a room with others without labeling yourself and like getting into the 70s kind of attitudes of like, hey, what if we all just try to be people? What about that? You don't know about what's been going on with developments of policy in your city. You don't know who to vote for. You don't know if voting even matters. You don't know what you're doing for work. You don't know who that philosopher is. Well, you know, maybe who cares? You're all right.
Yeah, and I think that the impulse of folks, and I think it's like a fine impulse to have, is to focus on healthcare. I think it makes sense as a strategy of reaching people. Like, we all need healthcare.
Definitely.
But I think a lot of anarchists and queer separatists, I think, just feel like they're going to be abandoned by democratic socialists. Like, democratic socialists are want to abandon people. Like, I feel like people don't trust institutions. Like, we were talking about this in the Discord a bit. Like, we're talking about, like, kind of the sticky, we were having, like, a sort of sticky analysis of anti-vaxxers, right?
Oh, sure.
How anti-vaxxers are, like, wealthy grifter celebrities a lot of the time.
Yeah, well, there's two classes.
Yes, but who are they grifting? Who are they grifting?
Yeah, they're grifting people who can't afford healthcare.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing, like, because I have some family members who are anti-vaxxers, and they...
My mom didn't vaccinate us.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We got some, but I was missing a bunch when I was in college, and I got them in college.
Yeah, my dad also had a big issue with vaccinations, but it's because he lived below the poverty line for so long that he just took to alternative herbal remedies because he didn't have anything else to do with his life, and he was like, you'll be fine. I've got, you know...
Right.
I believe in this because I'm still alive.
Right.
And, like... Yeah.
No, it's real. It's like people don't trust medical professionals. People don't trust.
But also, how would you? I mean, have you seen people who are taking, like, people take so much medication that is just sold to you. Like, how are you not suspicious of this? Like,
I know. Like, that's the thing. It's like even like I should have transitioned earlier. I should have transitioned way earlier. And I think I'm a little resentful of that. But I'm resentful even of the trans clinic I go to that keeps, like, jerking me around and changing my doctors and fucking up my prescription and all this shit, right?
Yeah, everything has to be hard.
And it's just like, why would people trust this shit?
Right.
Like,
no, it's completely insane. I mean,
would people trust the state? And why would people trust the government?
Right.
What reason do they have to do so?
And that makes so much sense then, like, when you think about, you know, people who get into, like, libertarian thought and people who get into, like, I mean, just even being a conservative, it's like, the government is horrifying and it's just backed up by a huge military and a police force and nothing about it is here to help us. So, like, we're going to make it bigger. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
What is anybody talking about? They just, like...
That's all they hear, and
they plant
just, like,
their heels, and they're, like, just in to protect themselves.
And that's how you have to have sympathy for regular people, because the vast majority of them are totally alienated from this process entirely.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, even if they hold some weird reactionary views, you have to understand why. Why do they hold those views? You have to examine it. Like...
Oh, totally. I mean, we have conversations in the truck that are, like... hilarious because so basically, like, I'm mediating between someone who's like, you know, canvassing for the Bernie campaign, and then the other person is like staunch conservative,
oh,
like thinks that Democrats created homelessness.
He's right.
I know. Well, I mean, don't think
they
that
both,
Democrats
they both,
did.
They both did.
I don't think it's their
did.
Specific yes. fault, and that's why you should vote
Neoliberals
Republican.
Neoliberals did. Yeah, no, he's...
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a nuance to it.
This is what we're talking about with the Ridgewood Tenants community board hearing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Episode from a couple months ago.
Yeah. But so I'm in the middle of it just going like... Oh, yeah, I know. Democrats are terrible. I mean, gosh. You know, it's great because in right-to-work states, they have no homeless people because they get turned into bricks.
God.
So I'm just in there,
just
you know.
Brutal, just like dropping brutalities.
Oh, that's, no, I'm brute.
No, it's great.
Yeah, that's what it's I'm great. Like when I talk to people with different viewpoints as me. I also say the C word, and I say the F word, and sometimes I say the R word because oh, it just it flies around the truck.
Oh, God.
Like nobody's business. People, they talk different. And what am I going to do?
People do talk different.
What am I going to do? Am I going to be like, you know what? We've got 20 hours to go sitting in this cab together, and I want to teach you how to talk, right, mister?
My fucking supervisor at Artform used to throw around the R word all the time.
Oy.
And that was like a power dynamic thing where like both me and my coworker were like, should we say something? What do we do? And we just neither
do
of
nothing,
us
ever, oh
ever
God.
Worked up the nerve to ever say anything to her.
Just, there's no point. No, I just like, that's when I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing because I can tell jokes here. Because yeah. I'm like, oh, these people are just, you know, down to,
it's
down
very
to say whatever.
It's a Zizekian way of now of
oh, man.
Thinking about it.
I love
off.
The Z's. I do. I love it because it's like, it's you have to figure out a way to live, you know? Like, I can't.
I'm sick of pessimism is what I'm sick of. I want to combat pessimism and I want to combat, like, I don't know. Like, I want to fight for something, but I just feel like I'm not equipped to, you know, like, I don't know, like, put me in, like, a troop, like, a in the left, in the Red Army, like, I'll just be a troop, just, like, tell me what to do.
Oh, that's chill.
I can't.
Yeah. I've just been watching more, like, I've been watching a lot of Marlena Dietrich videos and interviews.
She's awesome.
She's so awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's right. Like, and it's this thing we also talked about on the show. It's like, you know, do you, but when someone asks you, like, what your deal is, you can tell them. But otherwise, she's like, I'm wearing a dress and now I'm wearing pants. And then she's like, also, I hate Hitler. Fuck you. And then, you know, it's like, oh, damn. Now things are going because Hitler's like, hey, do you want to come over here? And she's like, hell no. And then things happen because your politics are your own and they inform your decisions. But
totally.
You don't have to, like, go out there and then and just, you know, make that the first thing you meet people with. Unless you want to go and become a representative or something, but like that's a different.
Yeah, no, it's if it's just your coworkers, you and whatever, you have to meet people where they're at, and it's gonna be difficult because sometimes they're at a place where they don't understand your literal humanity. But
yeah, no, they no, and
you
it's
do.
True. Oh my god, I entered back into the place where I am being misgendered every time I go to work.
Wow.
Which is cool.
Wild.
I just go around and people are like, hello, sir.
Yeah.
What's up? Hey, sir, can you hold on to this for a second, sir?
Oh,
and
God.
I'm just like, okay, I'm a sir here now somehow.
Yeah.
In other places, I'm an attractive female person. And here I am a man who carries things around. Super weird.
Yeah, totally.
Don't have time to talk to people about the way they could just like lay off of gender entirely. Like,
no, why would you want to add that time to your day also? Like your work
yeah.
day loading trucks. Why would you want to take 15 minutes after at every interaction you have
yeah.
to be like,
well, actually, excuse me.
I get that in an office setting where office workers, you literally do nothing all day. So you might as well talk
yeah.
about some real shit.
Right.
Like you do like 20% of work and then the rest is like fucking around in different capacities and like maybe answering a phone
yeah.
when it rings. If
going
it rings
on Facebook.
Like totally go for it. But yeah, if you're getting paid hourly and like why like and or you're getting paid you could finish your workday quicker and you'd be paid the same amount or whatever.
Yeah.
Why waste your time?
Yeah, totally. And that's what everything is just boiling down to time.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, wow, damn. Like, where am I trying to go? What does this do? Oh, who am I? Oh, my God, time is just sifting through my fingers and the planet is melting, but I don't even care. I'm just going to drive this diesel thing around. And like, oh my God, art too, when you handle it, gets so meaningless. Wow, it's amazing. Yeah, just like just bringing in all these, it's like, oh, damn, I'm just carrying around 20 Robert Longo drawings or something. It's right. Like, I was like, and then you take it to some place and their furnishings are terrible.
First of all.
Really? No. It's people. They have all of this money. You would think that they could buy some taste.
They never do.
No. And then you're just like, oh, why, you know, like, why is this expensive? Why does this matter? Oh, it's just because, like, it just reinforces itself. And, mm-hmm. you know, I want it to reinforce me. No, I don't know. I still love art that I love, you know. I guess the whole thing is just when you work a lot, you only have time to care about the things that you really love, and then you get to figure out what those are.
Yeah.
And then just like strengthen your relationship to those things, and then just kind of like you have the defense of being exhausted. Just otherwise, it's like
yeah. For real. Like, no, that's true. I think I've been trying to go back to what I really care about, which is like, you know, making zines with my friends.
Hell yeah.
But trying to incorporate, yeah, things that I've learned and ways that I've grown and like, not just like rest on. I don't know. I think I want to get better as an artist is part of it. Like, because I went to art school and I care about it. But then, you know, it's weird because the other side of me is like, well, this is sort of like organizing and raising consciousness. And like, there's a certain like political responsibility, I feel. And I think right now I have the luxury of thinking about that. But I know if I do get a regular job again, it'll go back to just me being exhausted all the time.
Yeah.
Because it's already exhausting working part-time just because they pay so little.
Right. Well, because that's like a different thing is like you get emotionally exhausted by being exploited and it's just yeah. like...
Ugh. And it's, and you know, at a certain point I'm like, oh, well, maybe, like, because a lot of my friends just like work for Trader Joe's.
Oh, yeah, that's the job.
And I'm like, oh, I guess I could just do that. Or I could buy myself time going back to school, but do I want to spend the money
right.
it takes to apply to all these schools?
Yeah, time and money and money and time and time and money and money and time.
And that's
time
like,
and
yeah,
money.
I feel sort of like on the straddling some positions that I'm just trying to figure out. And it's a little weird, but at the same time, I don't know, I love doing the podcast.
Yeah. Was this the most ragtag?
Yeah.
Most
oh my God.
See it through.
We're this is like I don't know. I like that like it is friends talking. Like it's not this like, okay, everyone, get together. We're all going to go in on this business venture and we're going to do all the things.
Yeah.
That all, like, somebody was, like, in the Twitter mentions being like, go on SoundCloud. It's you don't know what you're doing because you're not on SoundCloud. I'm like, I've made a decision specifically not to go on SoundCloud.
Yeah.
Like.
It's just annoying.
Like, fuck you. Like, no, I'm not going to do it. I don't like SoundCloud. Like, if someone else wants to aggregate us on SoundCloud, that's fine. I'm not going to take my time doing that.
Someone was like, I was telling someone about Art and Labor and they were like, oh, I'm like, I'm pulling up Spotify right now. And I was like, yeah, I don't think we're on Spotify. And they're like, oh,
we're never gonna get on Spotify.
Oh, okay.
It's not gonna happen. They're totally curated.
I don't care.
It's either they're curated or you have to buy hosting with one of their business partners.
Oh, whatever.
And we're not gonna fucking do that.
Yeah, I'm just not into it. I like, yeah, I was thinking about that too, because business acumen really stands in for value. in a lot of industries, and especially
like it's all sort of inflated. You mean like the actual?
Yeah, a lot of people have a veneer of like, okay, everyone, get ready. This is content, and this is what's important, and here's how you make a business, and here's how things go. And then everyone is like, oh, I'm responding to the tone of your, I don't know, whatever it is, your spiel. And they're like, yeah, okay, this is professional. All right, so now we're going to just curate you into a situation because you've got business acumen. You're like, you've got the good timing. You're making posts at the right time of day.
No, it's a language that people learn. And, like, you know, I've learned it to a certain extent as well. And, like, I don't see a reason to...
Everyone has to.
Yeah, I don't see a reason to pursue... Because I'm more comfortable with it not... entering that realm. It's
yeah,
seems
like what if there was something weird outside of it?
what if
this place outside of the business lingo? Like, what if you could
just have a friend and do something with your friend?
Yeah, huh. I mean, it's super weird though, like, because, you know, we talk about like the parasocial relationships and everything, and like I was listening to Revolutions Per Minute.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. The DSA podcast. Right. Or they're on the radio.
Yeah, they're actually on the radio. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, which is awesome. And they were talking about the difference between radio and podcasts. And they were kind of like, yeah, well, the radio is really important because, like, everything's happening on real time. It's not like one of those parasocial relationships.
Oh, no, it's still parasocial.
Yeah, I was like,
buddy.
Yeah, come on. You think just because it's happening
in
real
to do
time,
with time. It doesn't, like, have to do with time at all.
No, and also, these aren't only parasocial relationships because, you know, it's like, I just helped one of our podcast guests move apartments. Like, these are actually more real relationships that are just happening because we're all connected and you can tune into it
friends.
Or not. But, like, this is real life. Like, you can, yeah. And that's kind of maybe more valuable. I don't know. I mean, I would like money somehow. But everybody...
Money's cool.
Does.
I mean, but yeah, what do you think video game streamers are? That's the most parasocial because it's real time, because there's interaction with a chat, because it's, like,
yeah,
happening at the same time. And, like, those relationships do develop. It's crazy to watch. Like, if you ever watch a video game stream, they become friends with the people who give them the most money.
Yeah.
It's wild.
It is. Like, whoa. Patrons.
Or, like, people who contribute to their image in different ways, whether it's, like, fan art, whether it's, like,
mm-hmm.
I'm the mod of your channel or whatever the fuck. Like, that's yeah. all, like, an actual relationship that's not just parasocial at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it ends up, it's just funny. I don't know. Like, so I was listening to the Grandma's Virginity podcast again.
Oh, my God.
Because
it's fine. No, it's fine.
I know.
I'm not judging it.
No, it's like, it's something I need to work out.
No, you're fine. You're totally, I was actually hanging out with my good friend Kim, who, like, similarly loves Rick and Morty and was trying to apologize for him. Like, you don't have to apologize.
No, I just, you know, I don't.
No.
I don't apologize.
Like,
and everyone
stop.
Can go off. I just love it. I just do. I'm obsessed with figuring out how the comedy works. And, like, you know, it's been really cool watching the development and having this document. And I think about it a lot because that podcast actually gives me hope because they're, you know, they talk about exactly their life. They're like, I'm 30 years old right now. I don't know what I'm doing with my life. I get these gigs sometimes, but they're not enough to cover my bills. I am trying to find a relationship. And then all of a sudden, halfway through the podcast, they're like, oh, I had this, like, idea. It's like this cartoon. It's called Rick and Morty. I don't know. I probably won't sell it. Anyway, so what are you guys doing? Did you go on a date? And it's just like, what? This, you can access this moment in somebody's cultural experience. Like, I don't know.
Well, Lucia, when you hit it big and you will hit something, somebody will scoop you up.
Hey, when you hit it big.
Listen to me, because you are like one of the most talented oil painters in this whole city. Ugh. And it's insane that somebody hasn't scooped you up. Or, like, whatever
scoop
it is.
Me up. I'm being scooped up right
whatever
now.
Whatever it is, dude, you cannot become, like, Justin Roiland, the showrunner. Because no. Justin Roiland, the showrunner, was a psycho. And maybe he's better now, but that was bad.
Oh, no, he's crazy. That's what gives me hope, though. I'm like, oh, crazy people can do things.
But you have to be, when you reach that Justin Roiland current level, you can't, you have, I'll ground you.
It's, well, it'll just be impossible, because, you know, I won't, like, I just don't scream as much as he does.
Right, you're not,
I'm not screamy. I'm right. just crazy in a different
or
way.
Or like Dan Harmon, who also screamy. Right?
Also,
alcoholic screamy.
Alcoholic, just kind of crappy.
Yeah.
Just kind of crappy dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, admittedly crappy. I mean, I saw him get totally vodka drunk after he got a divorce and take his pants off, sliding around on a wet stage with all these cables around his feet when the Gramercy Theater told him to get the fuck out.
So
it was pretty incredible much. How bad.
Yeah, that's so much.
But that's what gives me hope. I'm like, oh, this terrible, terrible piece of shit misogynist asshole can make it. So, like, I can make it too because I suck way less than that.
Yeah, but like, yeah, but it's not, I don't think you have like a bootstraps, like, I'm gonna be a million, I'm just a forgotten millionaire mentality to it. I think you're different than that.
No, yeah, I'm not like, I'm not, well, because they have like the weird nerd complex that's yes. like, oh man, you know, one day Star Wars is really gonna be respected, and I just, you wait and see what kind of franchise this is. I told you.
You're like, oh, maybe one day I could like sustainably have a home.
Yeah.
Maybe even basically. Have a child.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah. Like, there's not really a high horse in the running here. Yeah,
totally.
I don't know. What about you? Do you want to have a house?
I don't want to. I'm against owning property, but I would love to cooperatively. I would love to do some sort of community land trust with people I like.
Do you feel like that's your goal?
I mean,
do you have goals of, do you want to make, do you want to make more books?
I love to make zines, and I want to be able to just, like, do that comfortably and not have to constantly worry about, like, am I going to make rent? Am I going to afford my meds? Am I going to, like,
yeah?
Do I have to take another job to just... Because I'm pretty content. I really do like my life right now. I'm constantly worried about it changing. And, sorry, I'm like... But... I would really just love security and peace. So, like, and I don't want to own things. I don't like privatization. I believe property ownership is theft, all that shit. But like,
yeah, I have like a little dream of, being in an apartment, where I have, I it's mine.
Yeah.
And like when I use the toilet, I'm just like, I know exactly where that hair came from. Or like, you know, like, oh, damn.
Well, that's fair. And that apartment can still be a community land trust. Like, yeah, it could be sure. part of a building that's a trust.
I just like the idea of having, I was like, oh, man, all of this food in the kitchen is mine. Whoa. Oh, yo, the clothes that I bought. No one wore them before I did.
No, that's all fair. I don't even mean to imply that I want to live in a communal home. I don't need to do that. I don't want to own the actual property, I think.
Oh, sure.
I just think I would rather an entity I trust own it, whether it's a socialist state or
yeah,
people I like.
Yeah, just because at a certain point, like, what we have here is... Like, you, if you just keep renting in the city, you're gonna, I mean, like, you're always gonna be struggling.
Yeah.
If you keep renting, it does, you know, you don't have the option of operating your life in a socialist manner because
totally.
It's always gonna be, like, on the edge of precarity as rents keep rising or, like, unless we get...
Massive stabilization.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which has been cool that we had kind of, like, some gains... throughout 2019 in housing.
Yeah, but I mean, but as we know, like once they pass stabilization, the landlords and politicians, people, and the ruling class will do whatever they can to kick people out of those units
to
flip those units, and it's just, and that becomes a struggle people have their whole lives. Like, you know, even if you hang on for decades and decades and decades, you're still worried. Like,
have you been following also, I mean, tangentially related to real estate, but in the city, like, there's this fracking pipeline that's supposed to go through Bushwick?
No.
You have
no idea what you're talking about.
Yes. Yes. There's a fucking fracking pipeline that people want to send through Bushwick.
Great. It's It's going to literally collapse. It's going to collapse.
Yes.
All of Bushwick is going to collapse.
Yes.
Holy shit.
Yes. This is what, so like if you, so everybody start following, I don't know if you're a New York City resident, the public power, if you just, I don't know, hashtag public power, and like the DSA is working on this a bunch, and I know they're problematic in their own right, but like it's completely insane because we have I guess this whole reliance now on like these power plants that are getting shut down because it's like, oh, how much of it do we want to have be nuclear and how much of it is like natural gas? And, you know, now the city is saying like, oh, well, this is really good if we have like natural, clean gas energy instead of any of that other nasty stuff that could possibly happen. And all we need to do is just like, you know, frack stuff where we can and then send it underground real easy.
Yeah, real easy. Tell that to fucking the other states they've been fracking in.
Yeah.
Been dealing with massive earthquakes, contamination of their water, and like just so, just like train cars that'll like just explode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was the other thing. They wanted to like, They're also talking about, like, trucking fuel around, which is, like...
Great idea.
Yeah, and the people I was listening to talk about it, they were like, this basically means that each truck is a bomb.
Yes.
I was like, oh, my God.
It does.
And they're just going to be driving around Brooklyn? How
Where
is this
people
better?
Get hit all the fucking time.
Yeah. Yeah, could you imagine cyclist explodes into pieces?
It's already so nerve-wracking to have gas stations as close as we have them to, like, buildings and,
I mean,
and
everybody has
sewer systems and infrastructure.
Pretty good about the cigarette smoking. Yeah, it's amazing.
I live, like, near a gas station. So
yeah, me too.
This freaks me out.
Yeah.
Like, one time the manhole in front of the gas station was on fire at, like, 3 cool. in the morning. And I'm like... freaking out, like, and I dial 311 and I'm like, there's a manhole on fire. They're like, you need to call 911. And I was like, okay, great.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
God.
That's exciting.
Awful.
That's fun.
Already falling apart. And then they want to add fracking.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It reminds me of like, sorry, I'm getting so like amped about how fucked up everything is, but.
No, it's great.
in Ridgewood, they added like, no joke, a dozen city bike docks.
Oh, good.
And it's
good.
Like.
So that they can bike around those insane corners that are like, it's not even safe to walk across.
We don't have bike lanes.
Yeah.
There are no bike lanes.
I know. I've walked around to like get to your house and it's like. Even, yeah, just navigating how you can, where you can, like, jump behind a tree if you need to get safe.
It's one of my streets doesn't have a sidewalk.
Yeah.
Like, there's no...
It's just, like, craggly and then street.
And it's, like... And there are these puddles, these huge puddles on every fucking block. From each end of Wyckoff, from one end of Wyckoff to the other. That, like... In the winter, they just turn to ice.
Yep.
In the summer, they become mosquito nets.
Oh, you know what you need is what we got in my neighborhood, which is the sinkholes where the asphalt, it just falls in. So the water, it goes down, hits the ground level. You see, it goes back into the earth.
Into
it's like
the earth.
Good.
Good for the earth.
There.
Get all that gasoline
belongs
water in
yeah,
there.
The slick, it gets taken up by the dirt.
Good. good. It drives me insane. Are the fucking priorities of neoliberals like insane?
Yeah,
I don't want to die. It drives me so crazy.
It's amazing. I was so in this. This one's gonna be just a real long episode. You can listen to us ramble instead of like talking to your family at Christmas. No. okay, so this is the book Linda Nochlin. I'm reading her. Sorry, everyone. I heard that she's like not good because she's white or something. I don't know,
that's
but
fair.
Yeah,
white people are bad.
I don't know. It's like yeah, it's like bad. You know, if you're like a woman who writes a history book, or I don't know.
In that time, you're gonna have some sort of problem. Like, yeah, we know everyone has problems in the past. They all have problems.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that is the disclaimer. But she's talking about this way of constructing literature in the realist style that relates back to Marxism, and the way that there was this sort of like secularization of our experience of heaven and hell during the industrialized like epoch. So what we saw was like, oh, this is literally hell on earth, but we're describing it through all of these point of view characters that are going through, like, and then it's just weird because like that's the death of transcendence, and you really more get like the luck of the draw. So you're just like, oh well, yeah, I mean there is a heaven and hell and it is all on earth, but like heaven is for the rich.
Yeah,
and you know, wow, that's what we got. Class analysis entered literature and we got,
that's what they determined, and
then there were
then they washed their hands of it.
She just goes over all of these passages of like factories and the way that it's like the churning machinations and the black smoke and the sooty faces and the pain and the torture and over in the palace, like,
yeah, that's interesting. How do you feel about that as a painter? Like these painters in the past who, I feel like lefty people love realism. I mean, we read Trotsky and Diego Rivera's thing about realism, and
yeah, it keeps coming up.
Yeah, like
there's social realism.
Yeah,
I mean, there's all kinds of ways that you, it's interesting because you can take the real in so many different ways that you can have like, I don't know, like a strictly materialist analysis of something, or you can kind of like define in psychological terms what feels to be like intuitively real. But this is more like, this book is centering around like the ideas of when we stopped portraying certain attributes of life as if it was like a Greek myth or something.
I see.
Or like a Christian virtue. So right now, like, Linda Nochlin is talking about all of these portraits of death and how really, like, stripped of narrative they are. And it's just like, you know, oh, hey, I'm this painter and my kid died because of the circumstances of how much everybody just dies all the time in this period of history. And so I didn't know what to do, so I painted a picture of my kid, and by the time I was done painting it, I felt like they were with me and I wasn't sad, and then I got to keep a memory of them because I don't have a photograph.
Right, there's no photographs.
Like, yeah, and so it's just like having the relationship of like crafting these images, and then the way that like your emotions can be sort of, you know, it's therapeutic in a way, but it's also like a historical document, and like,
Yeah, painters of that time, it was also a historical document. Like I think, thinking about, like, you know, like, oh, we're going to document all of these, like, ways that, like, peasants played games or whatever the fuck. Like,
yeah, totally.
And, like, now with the advent of photography, what is the role of that analysis of realism, you think?
Well, I think it's different because that's like something a lot of people had to contend with the pictures generation.
Yeah.
And before that, of course, there was also like impressionist movements where initially the like technological disruption of photography meant that painting was no longer like a primary source of historical document.
Right.
But because it has such a traditional lineage, it sort of like maintains itself through perceptual shifts. So a lot of artists, like on the first wave of figuring out what photographs were in relationship to these mediums, were like, oh, now we can go deeply into the subjective and we can talk about like a lot of anxieties, actually. Like
right.
The Josephine Berry book, Art and Bear Life, actually talks a lot about this period where Monet and like all these other kind of impressionist painters were directly referring to the emotional realities of seeing like a train cut through your pastoral scene, or like, you know, and then you get to the point where more and more technology builds up and painting ends up becoming this sort of like, I don't know, it's like a traditional underpinning to everything else where you don't necessarily make commentary on the moment as a topical gesture, but you more like bring the moment into tradition.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I can see squaring painting in that way. I resent the type of art, not just painters, sculptors too. Like I resent the type of contemporary artists that is like constantly trying to like, oh, well, my type of painting or my type of sculpture is different because this or this technology or whatever. I think it makes more sense to, or like because of advances in science. Science was like when I was an undergrad, the painters.
Oh, yeah.
Obsessed with science and like going into the micro and like incorporating that into the gesture and the motifs that they were working with. And
no.
It's just like, this is pretentious garbage. Throw all this in the trash. I don't care about any of this.
Yeah.
But, but that approach to thinking about it makes a lot more sense to me.
Yeah. It's really more like, I don't know, the way that I think about making art like this is more like when you have these really intense competing emotions that are so, they're impossible to describe without like getting into poetics.
Yeah.
Then you can make an image and spend time crafting the little elements of it. And then it becomes, yeah, just like it's a therapeutic psychological document that is something that other people can access because
of the traditional line.
Because of tradition, but also because emotions can be universal.
Right.
And we can like connect to things without even really knowing why, and then spend time relating to someone else's subjective viewpoint instead of being like, oh, well, these are my images and those are your images. You know, it's like, no, this is cultural exchange. This is what we do. But also, like, we have a very strong understanding now as, like, a general human experience. So you know, painting is this thing you go, you, like, check it out. You see the way that it was done. You see the materials that go into it, and they all relate to each other. And then you can start to get to this point where you're like, oh, it's like going to the movies, or oh, it's like whatever, you know, whatever you enjoy.
Yeah.
It's just there for you to like it if you want.
Yeah, and it would be nice if that was totally uncoupled from fucking the markets. Like,
yeah,
it would
yeah.
I can't like, because it's so hard to like even making zines. I'm like, oh, I got into them to try to do something outside of the markets, but it's like, oh, this is just its own market. It's just smaller. And like,
yeah.
I don't, and
it's just impossible to get out of the fact that we're like, we don't have another way of connecting, like the ability to like transfer resources around. And it's just sort of like, I don't know. I also in this, like the Nocklin book, she picked up this really good passage. I'm going to paraphrase it now, but maybe I could find it and take a photo or something for the whatever.
Yeah.
She was specifically talking about like anarchy and when you try to make a revolution in art. And it was this phrase that was like, the anarchist painter is not going to be creating anarchist imagery. They're going to be creating the images that they relate to that go against bourgeois aesthetics. Right. So just by the simple nature of you recording your own experience and then bringing it into the market, you're challenging the way that the ruling class sees people. And like you were mentioning, here's a painting of these peasant children and this is how they played.
Right.
That's actually like, you know, maybe that subject matter at the time, depending on how early it was painted, could be extremely challenging.
Right, and it was.
Yeah, and that's like the kind of the whole point is like, you know, the art world is such a conservative place that if you are capable of bringing your work into that spotlight and if you're capable of like influencing the way that the ruling class sees the world around them through like interfacing with the market, then you're doing something to change the perception of how like, you know, like, oh, wow, well, we didn't even think that peasants played games. You know what I mean?
Seriously.
Because they don't, because they're not paying attention.
Because they see us as little ants and otherwise. And
yeah, it's like, no, there's a huge amount of humanity all across the spectrum. And now you've got to think about it the next time you make a decision. And you have to think about it even harder if you hang it in your house.
It's true.
Yeah, it's just, I mean.
Don't you think they're catching on to that, though?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, it depends. I mean, what if it's really, really good?
One of the most popular people right now is Banksy, right?
Yeah.
And like it's gotten to the point where like rich people in fiction are depicted with Banksy's and Jeff Koons like side by side. Like I've noticed it several times. I'm thinking specifically about Carolyn Tuesday. It happened in another show I was watching too. I was like, oh, they own a Banksy. Like,
yeah.
It's like.
Delectable.
But it's like, I think in fiction, people are using that sort of shorthand to signify like, oh, this is a rich person who thinks they get it, but they don't.
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's no, I mean, you can't really let that be the only course of action or, you know, obviously.
And in the
like,
case of Carolyn Tuesday, the character who owns the Banksy, doesn't get it until he's flat on his ass and loses everything.
Oh, nice.
And then he gets it, and then he gets back up, and then he helps everyone.
Right.
It's really interesting.
Oh, God, that narrative. I love it. That's so like, I don't know, that's like some Dostoevsky shit or something.
Ooh, the factory owner lost every penny and then had to go to work in his own factory.
Yeah, seriously.
That's like I feel like the actual, I feel like maybe you can convince the petite bourgeois, but I think it's really hard to convince the actual ruling class.
Yeah, I don't know what I would convince anyone of, though. You know, I think it as long as you can actually like,
or influence. Even.
Yeah.
Like, I guess influence is hard to quantify and shit, but.
Yeah, that's what, it's just kind of like, you know, if you can make something that shows that, I don't know, if you can, like, tap into some humanity, like, just, mm-hmm. It's like, can you see the humanity here? Like, can you recognize the elements at play?
We've been this route on the pod before. Yeah. Look me in the fucking eyes.
Yeah.
Look at me.
Exactly.
And tell me.
Yeah.
That you're not going to pay me. Like, look at me in the eyes and
yes.
Tell me that.
Yes.
Like, or whatever.
If you can, yeah. I mean, if you can just have one of those moments, then, like, I don't even know what else I can do. Until I try, I don't know. You know, I say that in a more like philosophical way. Like, oh, what are people capable of?
This is what you've
really
trained for like, your whole like adult life, and this is what you do.
Yeah, it's the thing that I succeed at. Yeah. You know,
Totally.
But it, you know, I don't know. Who knows? You know, maybe like, maybe one day things will be, the seas will part. There will be a moment. There'll be a possibility. Just get up on a soapbox and I'll be like, you know what's bad? Exploitation. And then everyone will go like, yeah, I've never heard it like that before.
You have your own language and it's effective and it's cool and it's interesting.
And you do too. And so does everybody. Yeah. Like, look at where it got us. Yeah. I mean, that's all I'm saying. Like, I don't fucking know what to do with like mountains of plastic that they're burning in Indonesia or like, you know, fucking all of the dead koala bears or like, you know, fucking all the all
dude,
the
yeah, Australia
and all of the people
in the West Coast,
the West Coast,
the floods, you know what?
And
the fires.
Snow. It was so weak. Will we ever see snow again? I remember when I was a child, it used to snow. So we're fucked.
Yeah,
I'm just making pictures. I don't know.
Nah, dude, you're
nah, you know you. Happy holidays, everyone.
We're doing it, and it's and I'm proud of us, and I'm proud of our show, and I think that we have really interesting things to say, and I'm glad we've eked out this platform to say it, because, you know, for people like us, it's hard to fit into the institution, so we fit in somewhere, and it's really nice that people listen, and thanks, everyone.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. That's pretty wild.
All right, I'll see you guys later. Let's have fun, I guess. Is this the end?
Is it?
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think so. I can't see anything, but...
I can't either. It's getting dark. Cold. All right.
Bye.
Bye. Let's have fun. I get if you have an aeroplane that can fly the world and we can have a fantasy. It doesn't really matter if you drive a limousine. It really doesn't matter if you drive for galaxy. If you destroy a truck, I don't care if you drive a limousine. It doesn't really matter if you drive a Ferrari. I really don't care, cause I just love your company. Let's have fun. 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 Lots of fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun, lots of fun.